Shantideva, in his Bodhichara Avatara, says that all the happinesses that we see in the world are a result of developing altruism, and all the sufferings that we see in the world are due to self-cherishing attitude. And in short, there is not much need to talk about the benefits of altruism and the disadvantage of self-cherishing attitude. You should just compare yourself with the Buddha, and then you will know that. So at this time, when we have found the human life and obtained such a wonderful human intelligence, it is extremely important to find out what is it that is beneficial in the long run. In the case of external material progress, today we are able to find important new ideas, and we are able to make new discoveries and find new things. By taking the clues and examples left behind by many people in the past, and in the material field, there may be also some new discoveries which nobody has earlier thought about or found out. Whereas in the case of internal mental development, the process of mental development is something that many people had tried to develop. And in the case of, for example, the teaching of the Buddha, he appeared in the supremely emanated form, and if you read his birth stories, you will find that he is able to develop this unique wisdom and insight because of his having habituated with such a practice for many lives to come. And from an uncommon parlance, then in fact the very earthly manifestation of Buddha is emanated from the source, enlightened source, that is the Dharmakaya, the true body, truth body. And therefore he has taught this path that leads to omniscience, and therefore this path has been practiced by great masters during the last more than 2500 years, one after the other. And we, or from one point, therefore spiritual practice is easy, because we simply have to follow the path shown by them and the path that has been experienced by these great masters. And therefore the teaching of Buddha in general, and particularly if you reflect on the commentaries by many of the great Indian scholars, who are not only scholars but great practitioners and who are highly accomplished masters, and because of their wisdom and because of their experience, based on their wisdom and experience, they gave us countless advices and instructions that are therefore those of us who have various mental dispositions and inclinations, we all have many things to choose. So therefore, if you reflect about the whole process of Buddha's teaching, it's really like a supermarket where you can go and pick up different teachings and different spiritual practices that is relevant to your mental disposition. And therefore countless methods and techniques have been taught, and therefore it's important for us to be able to use them properly and to be able to employ them. So, if these countless methods and techniques that are taught remains just in the scripture, and if you are unable to either study them or unable to pick up the relevant teachings that is suitable to transforming one's mind, and if this way, if we waste our life, and then if we die with a great sense of regret and unhappiness, then that is a big mistake. and therefore you should think that I will make my life meaningful. And therefore should undertake a practice which is useful and relevant to all of us. And it is in this regard that one of the texts which is so effective in transforming the mind is text like this one, the Bodhicharya Avatara. And therefore countless techniques have been taught about with regard to meditation on impermanence, suffering and so on, and also with regard to meditation on emptiness and developing the wisdom with regard to that. If you compare the text like the Bodhicharya Avatara and Chandrakirti's Madhyamika Avatara, you will find that these texts explain completely the thought, the profound thought of Nagarjuna, and therefore these texts present you the summary points, the very essential points, and therefore such texts have a very unique instruction to present, and therefore we'll continue with the Bodhicharya Avatara. We are reading the chapter on concentration, and today we'll read from verse 121. So this verse explains about the need to remove self-cherishing attitude. But sometimes we are unable to develop, remove this such self-cherishing attitude because we have so much cherishing attitude towards our own body. And generally speaking, of course, we are encouraged to take care of our own body. And that's why, for example, if you read text like Vinaya text, then we are asked to take proper treatment of the sick and the helpless, and we are asked to take proper medicine and take care of our health. And therefore you can see that Buddha was someone who was very realistic and practical. And however, if you adopt too much obsession and craving and attachment towards your body, and then in that way this will harm the development of altruism. So this is what is explained in verse 121. Due to attachment to one's body, we develop attachment even to minor sources of fearing like a snake. Earlier I told you jokingly that we get very irritated when we are bothered by bugs, bed bugs or mosquitoes. Even though bed bugs and mosquitoes, they can't do much harm to us, but still because they are such a source of irritation, we express our wrathful manifestation. And therefore, because if you develop so much craving attachment to your body, then you develop fear even to those objects, which is really a very minor source of fear and irritation. So therefore this body, which is the source of production of fear, why should not we develop hatred towards this as our enemy? And it is relation to the body that we end up doing so many activities. Therefore we should employ this body for performing virtuous deeds and transform it as a basis of virtuous practices, and do not use it as a basis for committing non-virtuous deeds, and that's really the best way of protecting your body. And this verse 122 reads that this body is really the one that is responsible for performing all negative deeds. And with the wish to nourish your body and to remove hunger, thirst, sickness and so on, and you loiter by the side of roads and kill birds, fish, animals and so on. Similarly, as verse 123 says, that not only that, for the benefit, for your benefit and for respect, you sometimes even kill your parents, and you also steal from the offerings that are made to Buddha and Sangha, and as a result you are burnt in the hell without respite. Verse 124, therefore anyone who is wise, why should one guard this body with so much and make so much respect and offering to such a body? And therefore you should see this body as an enemy and affront this, or despise this. Verse 125 shows the faults of self-cherishing attitude and the advantages of development of altruism. Therefore, the thinking that if I give this to others, what will I use or what will I enjoy? And in this way, thinking for the benefit of yourself is the way of the devil. So here you are regretting your purpose as more important than the purposes of other people. So this is the devilish way of thinking, because it ultimately brings you to the path of ruin. And on the other hand, if you think that if I use this object or wealth, and if I do that, then what should I give to others? And in this way, if you think about others, this is really religious practice, and this is a virtuous practice. For one's own, verse 126, for one's own well-being, if you harm others, then you will be tormented by being born in the hell realm and so on. On the other hand, if you suffer for the benefit of others, then you will actualize all the perfections. And for the sake of one, if you harm others, means if you steal from others, if you rape others, if you use harsh speech to others, and if you engage in gossip which wastes your time and others' time, and similarly engaging in divisive talk, telling lie, you engage in all these activities for temporary benefit, and therefore for yourself, if you directly and indirectly harm others, then if you commit a negative deeds, then you will be born into hell realm. And if you commit some minor negative deeds, then this will finally lead to sufferings and problems. For example, even if you are born in the form of a human being, you will have to suffer sometimes heat, sometimes cold, sometimes headache, sometimes stomach ache, and so on. So these are all related to one's past karmas. However, for the benefit of others, if you suffer, then you will achieve all perfections. That means to benefit others, if you encounter certain hardships and therefore encounter certain sufferings, then you will have happiness in this life and in the future life, and gradually achieve enlightenment and omniscience. And it is through such an altruistic attitude that you are able to develop all the higher Mahayana spiritual paths and grounds. So that's the meaning of achieving all perfections. Verse 127. And those who aspire to achieve a higher state from the others, and then because of Now, for example, if you aspire to become famous, renowned, and thereby higher to the others, higher from the others, and in that way, if you engage in verbal, physical, and mental actions, then as a result, you will born into negative existence. And even if you are born as a human being, then you have your caste will be bad, or lineage will be bad, or you have ugly physical forms, and you will be stupid and dumb. And even in this life, if you despise others and try to deceive others, then later on, in the future lives, even if you are born as a human being, it is 100% sure that you will become an object of ridicule by everybody. And however, if you change this attitude, and if you observe humility and respect others and put them on your crown, that means respect others and see them in an elevated position, as is repeatedly said in the mind training teachings, that if you observe humility as is done by Domtomba, where he says that even if everybody puts me on their crown, I should always remain below and should be able to easily associate with others. So therefore, this kind of you should therefore think that you are someone who will serve others and who will help others, and then as a result you will be born into happy migration, and there also you will have great wisdom, physically handsome and beautiful, and someone who is respected by everybody. Verse 128, for the benefit of oneself or for one's own purpose, if you enslave others and let others do the job or do the work for you, and if you disregard rights of others, sufferings of others, and in this way if you treat others like your slaves, and you exploit them, and you can do so in the name of a lama, in the name of a leader, in the name of a powerful person, in the name of a rich person, in the name of a great scholar, whatever you whenever you exploit others based on false reasons, and particularly when you become high through knowledge, recognition, and so on, there is every likelihood of despising others and looking down upon others, and as a result of that, you will be born as a slave to others. On the other hand, and even in this world, in the case of those people who commit many atrocities on others, then later on they get imprisoned, and then later on they are despised by everybody. Contrarily, for the benefit of others, if you use yourself, and then as a result you will be born as a lord or as a leader or as a powerful person. So instead of enslaving others for your purpose, if you treat yourself as someone who treat yourself as a servant to others. Now, for example, in the case of Mahatma Gandhi, who visited England and undertook his course and become a famous barrister, and so therefore he has very good education, but during his stay in South Africa, and later on after coming back to India, he remained like almost a beggar. And even though I'm not sure whether he has committed his body, speech, and mind to all sentient beings, but he was really committed to the suffering people of India. And after coming back to India, he relentlessly struggled to free India from the British rule. And later on, when people were ready to elect him as the leader of India, but he was not after name and post, and some people might say that he is a silly person, but I do not think he is a stupid or silly person, even though I have not personally seen him. But as I was told by Chitul, that on the one hand he looks fragile, but on other occasions he really was sometimes very stubborn and very determined. And sometimes in order to actualize certain good objectives, you really have to be a little bit pushing and stubborn, and that's why people find fault with him, saying that he was a very stubborn person and he never listened to others. And he used to take a goat with him for the milk, and on some occasions he may be a little bit smelly also, but still, because of his determination, education, everybody respected him. So even these days Gandhi is remembered and praised. Now in the case of those people like the dictators, and everybody today speaks badly about these people. Verse 129 makes a summary of all those earlier statements. So in short, all the happinesses that we find in the world arises with the wish to benefit others, and all the sufferings that exist in this world arises from the wish to have personal happiness or self-cherishing attitude. And all the happinesses that exist in the world, means whether it primarily refers to the happinesses of the sentient beings that exist in this world. So their happiness, whether it's temporary mental happiness or the ultimate happiness of actualization of enlightenment or omniscience, all this arises from the wish to benefit others or altruistic mind. And even in the case of the good things that you see in the external environment, the harmony and balancing of all the external elements, and timely rainfall and so on, all these are result of the wish to benefit others. And because of people living harmoniously, a particular place and country may be not so good in terms of the environment in the beginning, but later on, because of the fact that people lived harmoniously and worked jointly, later on you will see the whole environment becoming very productive and very conducive. And all the sufferings that exist in this world are a result of one's personal happiness. And therefore all types of suffering, like suffering of change, conditioned suffering, and even the falls of being satisfied with just personal liberation, all these arise from self-cherishing attitude. Now likewise, if you think just about yourself, you destroy the environment, and just for your personal well-being, destroying the forest, so in this way you can see the destruction that's bring about in the external environment. And also likewise, due to self-cherishing attitude, you accumulate many negative deeds, and because of this, the place where people are born, either the place will be too dry or the place will be too humid, there will be problems of famine, flood, and all types of inauspiciousnesses. All this arises through self-cherishing attitude. And verse 130 summarized the point by saying that what need is there to talk much about these two differences. and you should just see the differences between the childish person who always try to fulfill his individual purposes and the enlightened beings like the Buddha who always worked for the benefit of other sentient beings. And therefore you now if you look at the great masters like the Buddha and his followers like Nagarjuna, Chandrakirti and so on, in the beginning they were also like us, a person with lot of ignorance, afflictive emotions, but because of their effort and the spiritual practice, today they have reached such an elevated position. And therefore today if you compare your qualities and with the qualities of the Buddha, or if you compare yourself with the qualities of the Bodhisattvas who are on higher spiritual ground, and even if you compare yourself with those practitioners who are on the path of Sarvaka and Pratyeka Buddha, you will find you cannot at all compare them. And what is the reason? We are all same in being, ascendant being, and we are same in having afflictive emotions, but still there is such a gap and such a big difference. Because in the case of ordinary individual like us, until now we have allowed the self-cherishing attitude to reside at the center of our heart, and even the methods that would bring about realization of enlightenment, even that is influenced by self-cherishing attitude. And so long as you have that self-cherishing attitude, even the spiritual practices are misused. And even the highest tantric practices that are useful for actualizing peaceful accomplishments and wrathful accomplishments, even these are directed and used for personal well-being, and therefore such practices become destructive. And therefore if you now compare yourself with the qualities of Bodhisattvas, Buddhas and so on, you will find there is a vast difference. And this is because of these two minds, whether you have developed altruism or self-cherishing attitude. Verse 131 reads that if you are unable to sincerely exchange your happiness with the sufferings of other beings, you will not achieve the state of Buddhahood or enlightenment. And even when you remain within the samsara, there will be no peace and happiness. And therefore if you do not remove the self-cherishing attitude and develop altruism, and then what need is there to talk about not being able to actualize enlightenment? Even while we remain within the samsara, it is not possible to achieve happiness. Verse 132, let us forget for the time being about achieving happiness in the future lives, in the future world. Even in this world, if you see the relation between a servant and a master, if the servant does not do the work, given task, and if the master doesn't give him the wages or gifts, then even the purpose of this life is not fulfilled. And therefore, if you think just about yourself, even the purposes of this life will be not fulfilled. And by totally giving up all the perfections and happinesses, so in other words, if you remove the altruism or the mind that cherishes the well-being of other sentient beings, which is really the process of actualizing peace and happiness and perfection of the seen, that means this life, and what is unseen means the future lives. So if you totally give up such altruism, and contrarily, as a result of having accumulated, having done sufferings to others, and as a result you will become a stupid, ignorant person, not knowing what is to give up and what is to adopt. And so this is really like voluntarily having patience with sufferings. So in this we should reflect on the meaning of these verses and see the faults of self-cherishing attitude and try to suppress and reduce it as much as possible and see the benefits and advantages of altruism and try and see it as the source of temporary and long-term benefit and try to develop it as much as possible. And in the case of self-cherishing attitude, try to eliminate the self-cherishing attitude that you have already developed and ensure that you do not develop it in the future. Next, explains about the need to exchange one's happiness with the sufferings of other sentient beings. Verse 134, all the harms that you see in the world and all the fears that you see in the world and all the sufferings that you see in the world, all these arises from self-grasping. So therefore, what need or what use is there to maintain this great ghost, the self grasping? So the self-cherishing attitude and self-grasping, these two are the real ghost, the great ghost that would harm us. Verse 135. If you are unable to forsake yourself or remove the self-cherishing attitude, it is not possible to eliminate suffering. Just as if you do not give up fire, you can't give up being burnt by the fire. And therefore, in order to eliminate harms to oneself and in order to remove the sufferings of others, you should give up one's body enjoyment and so on to others, and you should regard others like yourself. Verse 137. And therefore now you should think that I'm totally owned and controlled by others, and therefore you should not think about anything other than benefiting others, and you should see yourself as something that is to be enjoyed by the others, to be used by others. As is said in Nagarjuna's Ratnavali and as is said in many texts, that you should commit the energy of your body, speech and mind to your benefit and use to others. Verse 138. And when you commit yourself to others, you do not do that with personal interest. And you should think that I will do this forever, and therefore it is important to make the prayer that as long as sentient beings remain, I will remain to dispel their suffering. Now if you commit yourself in this way, then you commit your eye, your body and so on to others. So therefore your eye, for example, in the case of your eye, it is something that is owned by others. It is something that you committed to be used by others. So therefore you are not, it is improper therefore to use your eye for fulfillment of your purposes. And therefore the eye that you have dedicated for others, how it is proper to do wrong things to those people. Verse 139, therefore you should regard sentient beings as the most important thing, and therefore whatever good things that you observe in the case of your body, you should immediately forcibly take that and use it for the benefit of other sentient beings. And next verse, verse 140 onwards, it explains the unique instruction from the Bodhicharyavatara about the practice of exchanging oneself to the others. And this is a kind of special kind of instruction. And there could be two levels of interpretation to such verses. According to Sajja Pandita, in his text called Illuminating the Thought of the Buddha, he cited this verse, and according to his practice, he says that with regard to those that are inferior to you, those that are equal to you and those that are superior to you, you compare yourself to these three people. For example, in the case of enemy, an enemy who is inferior to you, who are equal to you, or who are superior to you. So when these enemies, when they develop jealous, competitiveness, or so when these enemies does this improper acts towards you, you feel unhappy and you feel disturbed. When the enemies so whether they develop jealousy or competitiveness and despise at you, you feel disturbed, and therefore on such occasions you should develop special understanding, thinking that just as on these occasions I feel perturbed and disturbed, so similarly I should not do towards those sentient beings who are inferior to me, equal to me, and superior or higher to me. So that is how it is explained in the thought illuminating the thought of the Buddha text by Sajja Pandita, and I've seen another interpretation in some other text. And then another level of interpretation is that to regard the inferior and so on as oneself means you should see them as inferior to you, equal to you, or superior to you. So you should replace others by yourself. So those other sentient beings and oneself, you make two categories. So make this kind of two divisions, others and oneself. Those that are inferior to oneself, equal to oneself, and higher to oneself. So these are the sentient beings. So these object sentient beings, towards them, you should now see the faults of self-cherishing attitude and the qualities of altruism. So include that into other sentient beings. So until now, you have been a kind of embodiment of self-cherishing attitude, and you've seen much qualities in the self-cherishing attitude, and you have regarded yourself as the most important. So this self-cherishing attitude, the old person, the old self, who was like an embodiment of the self, this should be categorized into the other section, and then develop jealousy towards it, competitiveness towards it, and despise it. See that as inferior to you, equal to you, and superior to you. And so see it as inferior and so on. So when you undertake such a practice, and particularly when you undertake a practice where you try to develop special visualization, you should visualize a section of neglected or poor people, and then also include and then you should think about self-cherishing attitude, who is sitting on a high throne with nice clothes and so on, who is full of pride and arrogance and looking down upon the sentient beings, and who was so proud that he thinks that he is even better than the Buddha. So categorize him on one section and these poor sentient beings on the other section, and then you make a comparison as is explained in this text. And imagine when you think about then jealousy, competitiveness, and despise that is being developed to these sentient beings by this self-cherishing attitude, and then you will be able to see how this self-cherishing attitude is making a big mistake. I think that process of visualization will be very effective and useful.
Not the medicine.
So that is the meaning of how you put yourself into the category of others who are despised and so on. And towards that object, whether you are doing one-pointed meditation or analytical meditation, let your mind stay on that and do not have any other conceptual thoughts. That's the meaning of having no conceptual thoughts. Meditate on jealousy, competitiveness, and arrogance. So as I said earlier, in the case of the old self who has good clothes, everything to eat, and categorize that on one section, and here you should categorize yourself in the section of the poor people, and then develop jealousy to him, competitiveness to him, and arrogance and pride to him. So first is meditation on jealousy, verse 141, and this embodiment of the self is respected, and we are not respected. So therefore you are developing jealousy. And what is found by this self-cherishing attitude is not found by me. This is praised. I am despised. This is very happy, and I am suffering. And then you develop jealousy. And then verse 142. When you think in this way, you might also get a little bit discouraged. Verse 142 reads that this old self, which is the embodiment of self-cherishing attitude, that this is very famous and great in the world, and living peacefully, and where I don't have such qualities. And verse 143 reads that such visualization might develop some kind of discouragement, and so therefore you should think that why should I get discouraged because of lack of such qualities, and therefore we all possess the quality. That means we all possess the Buddha nature. Not only that, when we talk about superiority and inferiority, it's a relative term, and therefore this object towards which we are developing jealousy, that also from one point of view, it also has many inferior qualities, and therefore we the humble sentient beings, from one point of view, we also have the capacity to become the supreme. Verse 144, not only that, in our case we have ethical discipline, and not only that, in our case the many deprivations like lack of moral discipline or lack of having proper view and many other downfalls, these are due to the power of actions and afflictive emotions, and these are not there with us from beginningless time. It is not the case that from the beginningless time we are poor and weak and without those qualities. And therefore, as much as possible, I should try to nourish myself and strengthen myself, and I should also be able to experience the hardships that I will encounter while serving and helping others. Verse 145 reads, and since it is proper to help sentient beings, therefore I should voluntarily welcome harms or hardships to benefit others. Verse 145. However, this self-cherishing body is not the object of nourishment, but there is no need to harm it. And therefore, to us, the sentient beings, even if the self-cherishing attitude has some qualities, what is use of these qualities? To us, the sentient beings, verse 146 reads that even the minor qualities that you see with a person who is an embodiment of self-cherishing attitude, he is abiding in the mouth of bad migration because he has developed self-cherishing attitude and ignored altruism, and therefore in the long run he will fall into a negative state of existence, and he is devoid of compassion to sentient beings. And so without having compassion, he is simply making a show of his qualities and trying to compete the wise ones. Next is meditation on competitiveness, verse 147. In relation to those that are equal to oneself, and in order to make us superior to that self-cherishing attitude, and I will argue and fight with him for obtaining material findings and for obtaining respect and so on. Verse 148, and with all ways we will make these qualities of altruism clear to the worldly beings, and make sure that the qualities of the self-cherishing attitude is not obtained by anyone. Verse 149, and I will hide my faults and and I will clearly highlight the qualities of the Bodhisattva, and I will therefore become an object of offering of sentient beings. And in the case of self-cherishing attitude, it has always harmed itself, as is said in verse 150, because of its improper deeds. Will ridicule it, will laugh at it, and talk about the faults of such self-cherishing attitude. Verse 151. And then seeing oneself as superior to the seeing the object, the self-cherishing attitude, as superior than us. So here you are meditating on kind of pride and arrogance. This mind, the old self, that is full of afflictive emotions, is said to be competing with us, the sentient beings. But this embodiment of self-cherishing attitude, is this equal to us in terms of hearing, wisdom, physical forms, lineage, wealth and so on, meaning that it's not equal to us, not equal to us. Verse 152, therefore we will make ourselves superior to the self-cherishing attitude, and so therefore we'll be able to enjoy completely in the peace and happiness by seeing our qualities. Verse 153, and even if this self-cherishing attitude, the old self. Has material wealth and so on, if it performs the work of benefiting others, then we will just give him the wages to him and we will control them. Verse
154.
The need to practice jealousy, competitiveness and arrogance is that it is this self-cherishing attitude which has brought us all types of harms and in countless ways and in many eons it has made us live within the samsara cycle of existence, bringing temporary unhappiness and long-term unhappiness. And therefore, as I said in verse 154, that now I will make this self-cherishing attitude decline. And not only that, I will make it undertake a lot of suffering in the sense of helping other sentient beings. And I will fight against it, realizing that how it has destroyed us in many ways. And with regard to actually confronting against the self-cherishing attitude, there are two ways. One is in a soft way, another in a harsh way. Verse 155 reads, you the mind who is an embodiment of self-cherishing attitude, because of your wish to just fulfill your purposes, even though countless eons have passed and made great effort, but still you have accumulated only sufferings. Verse 156, and therefore from henceforth until now, because you have brought about only suffering, therefore from henceforth I will definitely, you should definitely enter into the work of benefiting other sentient beings, and you will see the fruit of it, you will see the benefits of it, because what is taught by the Buddha is non-deceiving, and you will be able to see the advantages of working for the benefit of others and removing the self-cherishing attitude. If you meditate on altruism, then gradually you will be able to see all the qualities later on, like developing all spiritual grounds and finally enlightenment. Verse 157. And in case if you had right from the beginning, if you performed this work of exchanging oneself for other beings, and then by this time you would not have taken such a plight, such a poor situation, other than having achieved the perfect state of Buddhahood, meaning that you should have then by this time have achieved the perfect state of Buddhahood if you have performed this action of exchanging oneself for the others. You have by this time definitely have achieved enlightenment, and you will then be not in this same false state as you are right now. Therefore, verse 158 advises that even though the practice is difficult, but make your mind habituated with that, just as to the drops of semen and blood of others, you are able to develop this grasping of the self. Similarly, make your mind habituated with others. 159. And for the benefit of others, you should do a thorough analysis and investigation, and whatever good things you see in your body, you should immediately take that away and use it for the benefit of other sentient beings. And the next one, verse 160 says that it's proper to develop jealousy because the old self is happy and I'm unhappy. The self is high and I am low. The self is benefiting, I'm not benefiting. And therefore, why should not you develop jealousy to that self? Verse 161, one should therefore separate happiness from the self and make it suffer for the benefit of others. Therefore, you should analyze your fault. Verse 162, and the faults that you commit, the faults of the others should also be transformed into the faults of oneself. And even if one has committed a minor fault, it should be revealed to everybody. Verse 163, when you talk about the good things of others, your own fame and name will be overpowered, and therefore you should see as the slave of the slave, and use yourself for the benefit of other sentient beings. And this self should be then seen as the slave of others, and without having any pride, let it work for the benefit of other sentient beings, and then see oneself as in the nature of fault. Do not praise itself with minor qualities or temporary qualities, and ensure that these qualities of the self is not known by anybody. Verse 165. In short, for the sake of oneself, whatever harms that you have done to others, you should ensure that this now falls upon oneself to fulfill the purpose of other sentient beings. Verse 161. And realizing the shortcomings of the self-cherishing attitude, do not be self-righteous, and you should act humbly and with restraint, like a newly married bride, being modest and meek and restraint. And the same points are explained in verse 167 and verse 68. So these are the methods to destroy the self-cherishing attitude with soft method. And then verse 69 reads that even with this soft attitude, if the self-cherishing attitude is not listening to you and continues its self-cherishing activities, then since this is of no use to me at all, I will forcibly destroy you. As he said in verse 69, that the time that you have brought about my destruction is a time that is gone. I have now seen you, and there is no way you can escape, and I will destroy all your arrogance. And that means you have destroyed me at the time when I have no sense of what is beneficial and what is wrong. But now I have clearly seen the benefits of altruism and the disadvantages of self-cherishing attitude. Therefore, I have now a new attitude, new approach, and therefore I will destroy your arrogance, your pride, because I have very clearly seen how you destroy us and how you harm us, and therefore I will never submit myself to you. And you can never slip to me, so therefore where will you go? And therefore you should now give up this old notion, thinking that you are still benefiting yourself. And in fact, I will sell you today to other sentient beings, or I will give you to other sentient beings, and therefore So you should not get discouraged, but rather you should offer all your strength to be of service to others. However, because of carelessness, if you do not offer yourself to others, and then you will offer yourself to the guardians of the hell, next verse, verse 172, is summarizing these points. So in verse 171, what is simply saying that I now remember your destructive activities, and now you can never deceive me, and verse 172 reads that because of narrow-minded, in the past also you have given yourself to the guardians of the hell and made yourself suffering, and therefore you should now remember such horrible deeds, and you should destroy this mind of thinking only your purposes. And therefore, if you are someone who really wants long-term peace, happiness, and then do not develop joy and attachment to yourself, and therefore if you want to protect yourself from sufferings, you should always guard others. Verse 172, just as by cherishing this body and sustaining it, the more you become very sensitive and unable to tolerate sufferings. So if you let yourself controlled by desire, then even if you are able to if you have the whole world with you, it will not be able to fulfill your purposes, as he said in verse 175. And verse 76 says that you also do not have the capacity to fulfill all your desires and attachments, and so therefore this is a desire that can never be fulfilled. And because you are unable to fulfill your desire, you become afflicted or you suffer. And when you think about something which you are unable to achieve, then you always become unhappy, and because of attachment, hatred and so on, that also degenerates your mind, that means mind of altruism. And therefore without depending on any facilitating factors, you should remain like a lion who is totally independent from all other animals. And if you undertake practice of altruism like Maitreya, then you're really the lion among human beings, and who is not dependent on anybody, and who doesn't expect anything from anybody, and his whole work is to practice method and wisdom. And therefore you should, verse 177 says, therefore you should never give an opportunity to that would contribute towards development of desire of your body. And therefore not seeing this as body as something extremely beautiful, elegant, this is a good way of thinking. And verse 78 says, and also realize that it is improper to develop attachment to the body, because finally when you die it will become just a dust. And also in terms of the actual nature of the body, it can't move if it is not moved by the presence of the mind. And and also in terms of the nature of the body, it is extremely impure, filled with blood, pus and many other impure substances. So why you develop so much grasping to such an impure body? So in terms of the movement of the body, it moves due to wind and the mind, and in terms of entity it is impure, and it experiences also many sufferings, like suffering of sickness, birth, aging and death, and the sufferings of not meeting what you want, and suffering of meeting not what you want, and suffering of separating from those that you want. Verse 179 reads, so therefore whether you remain alive or die, what use of this machine of the self? What is the difference of this body from a cloud of earth, and why you should remove pride towards or arrogance towards this body? Verse 180 reads that we are also totally ignorant of what is good and what is destructive, and therefore verse 180 says, what is the use of honoring this body, which is only a basis of accumulating many sufferings, because this body is really like a piece of wood, and in terms of the body itself, even if others harm you, you have no power to retaliate back, and so therefore it is improper to develop attachment and hatred. Verse 181, I have nourished and looked after this body until now for a long time. But from the body it has no feeling of gratitude and also no attachment. And at the time of the death, even if the body is devoured by vultures and so on, it has no capacity to develop hatred. And therefore why should I develop attachment to it? Verse 182. Verse 182 reads, whether others harm you or help you, the body has no capacity to get angry or to get pleased. The body does not know this, and therefore why should I make so much effort, or why should I tire myself to nourish this body? Verse 183. And if you answer by saying that even though that is the nature of the body, and the body does not know whether it is praised or despised or defamed, but since I possess this body and I want happiness, and therefore this body is my friend, and therefore I guard it and look after it, and it is because of this if you are developing attachment, then this is true in the case of all other sentient beings. All other sentient beings are same like yourself, experiencing happiness and suffering in relation to their body. So in that case, there is no particular reason that why you develop so much attachment to your body and not to the bodies of others. So therefore, since everybody wants their body, irrespective of how subtle their body is, therefore why you do not like the body of others. So therefore verse 184 says that without developing craving and attachment in order to benefit other sentient beings, I give up this body, I offer this body. And therefore, even though this body has many shortcomings and faults, but since it has capacity to benefit others, so therefore you should use this to be of benefit to others, since it has the capacity to develop powerful wisdom, since it has the power to develop strong altruism. So therefore you should return it. And verse 185. Since this is a chapter on concentration, it summarizes the point how to now concentrate, since these are the forms. That means how should you control your mind? Until now we have been engaging in all kinds of childish activities, and enough is enough now. Now you should concentrate and gain control over your mind, and so that you are able to direct your mind towards virtuous practices. And right from the Buddha until to your present teacher or Lama, they have all practiced the view of emptiness and this altruism, and therefore you should now, verse 85 reads that you should be contented with this childish way of life and now follow the path of the wise ones, and remember the teachings on introspection and maintain mindfulness and conscientiousness and stop sleep and dullness, verse 186, just like the compassionate Buddhas and Bodhisattvas. One should patiently accept what I have to do, and day and night, if I do not make an effort, how could I put an end to sufferings, or how could I put an end to my sufferings? And verse 187 says, therefore, in order to eliminate the obscurations, the five types of obscurations, in order to remove these obscurations, I will withdraw my mind from wrong paths and let my mind continuously or forever abide on the chosen object, and I will remain in that meditative repose. And in terms of the time, I will let it abide in the object continuously with mindfulness and conscientiousness. This completes the chapter on concentration, which is the 8th chapter from the Bodhicharavatara. Now here we'll read from the text, maintaining like the rays of the sun. So we'll read from the topic, that is meditation on ultimate bodhicitta. The topic here reads that with regard to the process of training the mind, aspiring the purpose of other sentient beings, this has two subdivisions. The first subdivision explains about the practices during the actual meditation, and this is subdivided into two titles. The first is meditation on loving kindness, and this is explained by the line from the root text of the 7 points of mind training, saying that you should intermix these two practices of giving and receiving. And one should meditate on loving kindness by offering one's body, wealth, and virtuous deeds to others. And therefore, first of all, you should reflect on the benefits of such practices, as is taught in King of Meditative Stabilization Sutra, and also the field of Manjushri. And in the King of Meditative Stabilization Sutra, it says that that even if you make many material offerings to the ultimate object of offering with countless varieties of wealth, this cannot compare the merit of development of loving kindness even for a moment. And the same point is said in the precious talent. It speaks about the benefits of not being harmed by poison weapons, and how you should achieve your purpose effortlessly. And if you have loving kindness, gods and human beings will also love you, and they will flock around you. And you can also recall that the Buddha has destroyed the evil forces through meditation on loving kindness, and therefore meditation on loving kindness is the best way to guard yourself. And this process of meditation is taught in the Bodhicaryavatara. And in the Bodhicaryavatara it says that I will offer my body, wealth and the virtues of the three times, you know, to fulfill the purposes of all other sentient beings. And then it explains about how to offer one's body. And when you offer your body, it should not be offered in the impure form of blood, flesh and so on. And the process of offering will be explained later on. And with regard to offering your body, this is also explained in the Gandharva Sutra, and similarly in the Vajradvaja Sutra. If you are reading the English text, it is on page 61. I'm sorry, I'm reading the Tibetan text. So if you are reading the English text, it is on page 61. And again there is a quotation from Bodhicaryavatara which says that in order to fulfill the purpose of sentient beings, I will transform my body into the body of a precious jewel. And as Shantideva prays that when during the intermediary eon, when sentient beings experience famine, may I become a food and drink, and may I be able to manifest myself into multifarious forms of articles to elevate the sentient beings who are deprived of food, clothing and so on. And similar practices are taught in the Bodhisattva Bhumi. And in the case of such a Bodhisattva practice, even with little effort, you accumulate great merits. And this is because our Bodhisattva possesses not only bodhicitta but also possesses great wisdom. And then it explains, then the text explains about how to practice such giving to sentient beings and also to the environments where the sentient beings live. And with regard to practice of giving to sentient beings, it speaks about undertaking such a practice towards those sentient beings who have not entered the path and those who have entered the path. And in the case of practice of giving to those sentient beings who have not entered the path, you can imagine your body offering to sentient beings who are in the reviving hell, in the ad hoc hells and so on. And when you make such offering of your body, imagine that your body is endowed with all the seven qualities of a superior being, and thereby imagine that they are all able to obtain such a life with leisure and endowment. And also imagine your body as a precious jewel from which they are able to drive food, clothing and so on. And similarly, you can imagine offering them meeting with teachers and meeting with the teachings of Sutra and Tantra. And in short, imagine that they are able to develop loving kindness and compassion, which is the root of bodhicitta. and they are able to undertake six perfections and achieve enlightenment. And similarly, you can visualize the countless suffering sentient beings in the form of hungry ghosts and so on, and imagine that they all get the happiness of Dharmakaya. And likewise, you can think about the suffering animals. And similarly, sentient beings in the form of four great kings, or the Brahma family, or the 12 kinds of gods, or those in the intermediate state. And normally we talk about 16 kinds of gods, but here we are talking about only 12 kinds of gods. And similarly, imagine four types of sentient beings who are in the formless realm, and to each of them, imagine that you offer a perfect body to each of them, and imagine that they all achieve the perfect state of happiness. And similarly, imagine undertaking such a practice in relation to sentient beings in the intermediate state being, and particularly undertake such practice to giving to those that had harmed you. And there you should think that there you should imagine that countless food, houses and external material facilities emanate from your body, and then the harmful attitudes of these sentient beings are invited in the form of a hook by the bodhicitta, and then you express the word of truth to them, saying that you have acted as my mother for countless lives, and during those times you have benefited me through many ways, and you protected me from many sufferings. And also from beginningless time, I have eaten your flesh, drunk your blood, gnawed your bones. I have beaten you, robbed you, killed you, and therefore I have to pay the retribution. And therefore today, this is my time to repay your kindness, and you have every right to use me. So therefore, if you want food, enjoy food from me. If you want clothes, enjoy clothes with me. If you want a place of living, have that from me, and so on. And likewise, if you are imagine that if they are vegetarian, you are satisfying them with vegetarian food, and if they are non-vegetarian, then non-vegetarian food, meaning that you are able to fulfill all their wishes. And if you are in great hurry, then have uncooked meat, and if you are not in hurry, have cooked meat. So such details are being explained to show that how much one is really concerned to fulfill each and every details of the minds of other sentient beings. So I think this kind of really practice of development of altruism is really useful, and therefore when people sometimes see me and complain saying that they are harmed by such and so spirits, then I tell them that try to meditate on love and compassion, and with this kind of verses talking about the development of love and compassion, we offer some khadaks to those hostile places, and then below that I put my signature, and if we're able to see some improvement in the attitude of the spirit, then probably I can take the credit because I put the signature. So what I'm saying is that such kind of development of altruism is really the best way of benefiting them. And there is one verse which reads that the result of having benefited others is happiness. and the result of harming others is suffering. Therefore, taking your body as an example, do not harm others. So with regard to the practice of giving and receiving, first you should meditate on compassion and receive the sufferings of others. And having received all their sufferings, then you should practice giving, visualizing on loving kindness, and offer your happiness and peace to others. Next second point is the process of making such an offering to those who are who have entered the path, spiritual path, for honor, who have developed all of these spiritual paths. Now with regard to those who are following the lower vehicle path, imagine that you offer your body in the forms that they like, and thereby imagine that in this very life they are able to actualize the state of Buddhahood. And similarly, you make such an offering to people who are on the first two paths and who are on the 10 spiritual grounds, and imagine they are able to perfect the two collections, and their mind is filled with the experience of bliss of Dharmakaya. In the Bodhicharyavatara it says, may all sentient beings have happiness by the infinite peace of the Buddhas as a result of repeated offering to countless Buddhas. So this completes the process of practice of giving to the sentient beings. And then the second point is process of undertaking such a practice towards the environment. And imagine your body in the form of a wish-fulfilling jewel, and then offer it and give it to the infinite environments of the world. And through such practice of giving, imagine that all the imperfections and impurities of the environment are purified, like the presence of bushes, ugly bushes or sands, cliffs and so on. And imagine that the whole environment transforms into a form of precious ground that are even, open, extensive, smooth, without bad smell, who are like crystal clear and fragrant. And in the Bodhicharyavatara, Shantideva explains that in all occasions may the ground becomes even without thorns and so on. And may even from birds, trees, and rays of light, and even from space, the sound of Dharma or the teaching of Dharma continues without interruption. And next point is the process of giving enjoyment, giving wealth. And here also you imagine all your possessions and wealth in the form of wish-fulfilling jewels, and offer it to others as you have done in the case of the first practice. And through such offering, imagine that they all meet with worldly and beyond worldly wealth, and they all become a force to achieve enlightenment. And the third is giving the virtue. Now in the case of the body and enjoyment, what has been destroyed or what has been gone in the past cannot be given in the future. And therefore, you offer only what you have right now and what you will get in the future. Now, in the case of virtuous practices, you can offer all those virtuous practices that you have committed or done in the three times, whether it's a virtuous seed or imprint that you have collected in the past, you can offer them. And in the case of the present and the future, you can offer all virtuous deeds until you achieve enlightenment, as is said in Bodhicharyavatara, also as is said in the Akashgarbha Sutra. And you should give such virtuous practices by thinking that may the merit of all my virtuous practices become a source of nourishment and sustenance of all sentient beings. And therefore you should offer even a minor virtuous practice, just like the virtue that you have earned by giving a handful of food to a hungry animal. And recall all these small incidental good deeds. And then of course all the major good deeds like the development of bodhicitta, you should offer all this. And when you give these virtuous deeds to others, imagine that you offer such virtuous practices to each and every individual. And through that way, imagine that all these sentient beings are able to fulfill the necessary process and conditions for actualizing enlightenment. And then finally, they are able to perfect the two accumulations and experience the peace of Dharmakaya within their mind. And therefore, if you do not train yourself at least at the level of visualization in terms of such practice of giving, then you will not be able to practice even a minor giving. And however, if you make your mind habituated with such practice of giving, and then gradually a time will come and there will be no difficulty to actually even offering your body, as is said in the King of Meditative Civilization. So here you can also do a systematic process of visualization of all the stages of the path, and that will be easier for you to reflect, because in that way you can see how sentient beings are able to gradually develop such spiritual progress and finally achieve enlightenment. This is said in the King of Meditative Stabilization Sutra, that the more and more a human being analyzes with a particular object, the more the mind enters into such an object, meaning that one will get habituated with such a practice. So therefore, in order to get a perfect state of practice, you should right now get habituated with even minor practices. And of course, as we had studied earlier, that in the beginning stage, when your mind is not ready, and then at that time of course you can't give your body to others. But if you start making your mind habituated with such practices, then gradually you will be able to undertake such practices without any difficulty. And the same point is said by Arya Sura of Bhagavapavu, where he says that even if you do not have the capacity right now to benefit others, you should at least mentally always think about it. And then gradually you will be able to develop and practice it. So even at the level of visualization, you should practice it. And the same thing is said in the instruction of the Master Chekhava Chembu and also in the birth stories of the Buddha. Whether you hear or think or remember, whether you maintain some contact, you should always think that may this be of benefit to other sentient beings. And if you do so, that then you will be able to collect merit equal to the number of sentient beings towards which you have undertaken such a practice, as is said in the precious garland. And when you have wholeheartedly made such a dedication and offered your body wealth and to others, then you should not enjoy them with self-cherishing attitude or with craving towards yourself, and if you do so, then that will become an afflicted downfall or deluded downfall. So in that case, how a bodhisattva should enjoy one's body wealth and so on? If you enjoy them thinking that I will serve other sentient beings and fulfill other purposes, then there is no fault, as is said in the Shiksha Samuchya, and also as is explained in the Tsongkhapa spirit stages of the path. So this is really like a servant who is enjoying the wealth of his master with the wish to guard or with the wish to do good for the benefit of the master, and then there will be no fault. Next second point is meditation on compassion. First is reflecting on the merits or advantages of meditation on great compassion, because that will then strengthen your mind. As is said in the Madhyamika Avatara, that in the case of compassion, it is really like it is something that is necessary in the beginning, in the middle, and in the end. And therefore, Chandrakirti, when he composed the Madhyamika Avatara, he praised the great compassion in the beginning rather than to a Buddha or Bodhisattva. And that is why all compendium Dharma Sutra says that a Bodhisattva should not train in many dharmas or religious practices. A Bodhisattva should train in one practice or dharma, and if one perfects in that one practice, then one will have all the dharmas in the palm of the hand. If you ask what is that one dharma or one practice, it is great compassion. Because if you have that great compassion in the palm of your hand, you have all the teachings of the Buddha in the palm of your hand. So this is similar like the precious will of a universal monarch. Wherever the precious will of the universal monarch exists, there exists all other forces of the universal monarch. Now, with regard to meditation on the practice of compassion, or with regard to the practice of receiving through meditation on compassion, you can do so in relation to sentient beings and in relation to the environment. And with regard to the first practice, the root text from the Seven Points of Mind Training says that this practice of the receiving and giving should be done alternately, and the practice of receiving should be done first from oneself. That means you should receive sufferings and the causes of sufferings of sentient beings towards yourself, and then meditate on compassion. And with regard to the process and stage of practice, and when you undertake such a practice of giving and receiving, do not do so thinking that this will be beneficial and useful for me. Now, such practice, with regard to the order of such practice, first you should start in relation to yourself, And that means, first of all, you should think about all the origin of suffering, like the actions and afflict emotions that you will experience in the future. And similarly, the sufferings that you will experience in the future in the form of 5 or 6 types of sentient beings. Imagine that all these sufferings and origins of sufferings are taken from your possible future life, and these sufferings and origins of sufferings are taken upon your present body, and then imagine that in the future you will be without such sufferings and the causes of sufferings. And likewise you can imagine receiving the sufferings that you will experience in the coming months or in the coming years and so on. And the actual effective practice, whether it's loving kindness or compassion, it should be done first of all in relation to a sentient being with whom you are very close. And unless you are able to start the practice with regard to a sentient being which is close to yourself and who know yourself, then even if you think about sentient beings in general, it will not be effective, because as soon as you actually come into contact with individual sentient beings, you will develop hatred, attachment, anger and so on. Similarly, you should practice equanimity to other sentient beings in the same way, and these are all explained in the Bodhisattva-avatara. When you are able to develop a strong sense of practice of strong practice of exchanging oneself for the benefit of other sentient beings, then you should practice giving to others, giving your qualities to others and receiving their sufferings upon yourself. Now when we talk about receiving the sufferings of others upon yourself, this is not to visualize that. This is not to visualize and think that you have taken sufferings from others, and thereby the sufferings in other sentient beings are now not visible. Or this also does not mean to say that you receive the sufferings of others and put it somewhere near you. The whole purpose of such a practice of receiving sufferings by the sentient beings is to be able to banish and destroy the self-cherishing attitude. So therefore imagine receiving all these sufferings upon your heart, the self-cherishing attitude, as is explained during the meditation on loving-kindness. So in this way you should imagine receiving sufferings and the origins of sufferings of beings in the hell and so on, and imagine that they are collected in a heap on your heart, and then they ripe and mature on the self-cherishing attitude. And then imagine that these sentient beings, the sufferings and the origins of these sentient beings are totally eliminated and removed. So similarly you should visualize with regard to sentient beings of all the 10 directions, like in relation to all the hungry ghosts, all the animals and human beings in the four or eight continents, 4 major continents and 8 minor subcontinents, and similarly in relation to the beings in the realm of the god and in the formless realm. And next, second point is the process of practice of receiving the imperfections of the environment. And here you should imagine that all the imperfect or impure worlds which are produced by actions and afflict emotions, imagine that they all change and transform into perfect pure worlds. And in this way you should receive all the sufferings upon yourself and offer your happiness and virtue to others. and in this way meditate on loving kindness and compassion. And the great master Shavupa has said that this is really the best way of banishing the devil of self-cherishing attitude. And so these are explained in many texts, like the biography of Mani Bhadra, and similarly in many prayer texts, and you will find such explanations in the prayers of the supreme practice, the prayer of offering of supreme loving kindness. And also Nagarjuna, in one of his texts, says that may all the sufferings of others ripen upon my mind, and may all my virtues ripen upon the mind of other sentient beings. And similarly, Nagarjuna explains the same point in his Bodhicharyavatara, as we have already read. And it's also explained in the Sutra Alamkara, and also in the 70 verses of prayers. And this point is also highlighted in the regular confession of Samara, saying that may all the sufferings of sentient beings ripen upon me, and may all sentient beings have happiness through my virtuous practices, and in all lives to come, through each of my body, speech and mind, may I be able to fulfill their purposes, like the precious vase and the wish fulfilling tree. And then the next point explains about how to undertake a summary practice of giving and receiving. And this is explained by the root text from the 7 points on mind training, saying that these two should be mounted on the breath. That means when you train in the practice of giving and receiving, you should do so by watching the breath. When you breathe out, imagine that you are offering your peace and happiness and virtue to others. And when you breathe in, imagine that you are receiving the sufferings and origins of sufferings upon your heart. And then imagine that they are all separated from suffering. And the next second point explains about how to undertake such a practice during the post-meditative session. And this is explained by 3 lines from the root text of mind training, called 7 points of mind training. And this root text says that when you encounter 3 objects, 3 poisonous minds arises, and try to transform these 3 poisonous minds into 3 virtuous minds. And so that means that when your 6 sense powers engage into 3 objects which are pleasant, unpleasant and neutral, then the 3 poisons arise, that is either hatred or attachment or ignorance. And so when such 3 poisons arise, imagine that in this world there are so many sentient beings who are developing such kinds of afflictive emotions, and so therefore you should pray that simply my experiencing of the development of these 3 poisons and afflictive emotions, may all sentient beings cease to develop such afflictive emotions, and may all these sentient beings be without the 3 poisons. So whether you are going or sitting or sleeping, in all walks of life, or whether it's in the day or night, in all times you should try to meditate on it, and not actually you visualize and meditate on it. Even in terms of merely using the word, try to practice and adopt these practices. As he said in the stages of meditation by Kamala Shila, that in terms of practice of great compassion, whether you are going, standing, or in all walks of life and in all times, you should ensure that all sentient beings are able to, you should ensure that you are able to develop such a compassion in relation to all sentient beings. So you should have developed such attitude and motivation, and in terms of actual practice, even you should repeat them by saying that may all sufferings ripen upon me, and may my virtuous deeds ripen on them. So whatever recitations and prayers you do, you should do so with strong feeling and realization and understanding. And if you undertake lots of repetition without any feeling, without any sensitivity, then it's really of not too much use. And if you're able to bring about some changes in the mind, then even if you recite one line, it makes impact and it's useful. And however, it is not enough to develop some strong emotion and feeling at that very point, but what is important is to make your mind habituated with it. Because, and of course, to develop such a positive emotion by reflecting on certain positive qualities is a good thing and not a bad thing. But however, what is important is once you are able to bring about such transformation, then it's important to maintain the continuity. And therefore, with unflinching stamina, with unflinching devotion and determination, you should continue your practice, as is said by the great Master Sharawa, where he says, in order to get habituated with this my instruction, it should be like a straight long beam. So he's saying that those who want to get habituated with my instruction, it should not be a kind of beam which is not reliable, and also it should not be like a boulder which is falling all the way from a steep slope. And also, so it should be really like the difference between the blood and the milk. That means milk is completely white and blood is completely red. So that means you should be completely dedicated in your practices. And if you undertake such a practice, then just like a donkey that comes out from among a flock of sheep, you will be able to get liberated from all the harms and sufferings. And therefore, and when you develop such a mind, and particularly in the case of Bodhisattva who are on a higher spiritual ground, then when you have such a strong dedication and such an altruism, then you will be able to benefit others, and that will also become the main source of achieving enlightenment. And the state of Buddha is called a state which fulfills the purposes of other human beings and purposes of oneself. And in terms of oneself, one has actualized all the higher realizations and one is able to fulfill the purposes of other sentient beings. And sometimes people might get the wrong impression that Bodhisattva way of life is like a knife which brings about which is a kind of self-tiring work and practice. Next second point is training the mind in aspiring enlightenment for oneself. When you have trained in the practice of loving kindness and compassion, and then if you ask who is that practitioner who has the capacity to develop such an aspiration to achieve enlightenment for oneself, and even in the case of the great beings like the arhats of the Sarvakas and Pratyeka Buddhas, and even in the case of the Bodhisattvas on the ten grounds, even though they have a very powerful ways of fulfilling the purpose of other sentient beings, they do not have the capacity as is achieved by the Buddha, who is able to spontaneously and effortlessly teach Dharma to all sentient beings, and who through the manifestation of even one ray of light is able to fulfill the wishes of countless sentient beings and is able to deliver them to the state of the Buddhahood. And therefore, it is only the state of Buddhahood where one has perfected one's purpose and purpose of the sentient beings. And therefore, you should think that I will definitely achieve that state of enlightenment for myself. Next second point is the branch instructions. In the branch instructions, it is explained under 5 points. From the root text of the mind training on 7 point, it says that transform the misfortune into the path. And with regard to this, it says that when the sentient beings and the environments are totally disturbed and boiling and turbulent as a result of negative deeds, one must transform misfortune into the path. And when the whole environment we experience today is a result of having performed the 10 non-virtuous actions, and in the case of sentient beings, their whole focuses for developing afflictive emotions, and the thing that you do is only negative actions, and it is because of this, those that are on the side of the non-virtuous deeds, their power grows, and those who are on the positive side, their power becomes weak. And it is because of this you see so many harms to those people who engage in virtuous practices, and particularly those who have entered into the Mahayana path of practice. They confront host of disturbances or obstructions, and at such a situation it is important to be able to transform the misfortune into the path, and the interruption and obstructions as facilitating factors, and to see the harmful obstructions as one's spiritual master. And if one is able to do that, then this is the meaning of transforming misfortune into the path. So whenever you encounter such problems, you should not discourage, rather you should think that just like myself, there are so many others who are suffering, and therefore may all these sufferings come to an end with my experience of suffering. And I very often meet some people who say that I'm suffering from such an illness, and please His Holiness pray for me so that the sufferings of other sentient beings are reduced by my this suffering. So if they are genuinely saying this, then that's really admiring. I hope this is not just a consolation for themselves. So it's really important to realize that the real protection has to come from within, the real blessing has to come from within. And however, in our case, we don't pay much attention to our internal practices, but we always have to rely on a countless lamas and teachers, countless protectors and deities. So this is actually a wrong way of practice, a wrong attitude. And with regard to the second point, which is an elaborate explanation of this point, the first point explains about how to transform misfortune into the path by developing altruism in terms of time, whether you are happy or wealthy, or whether you are suffering and deprived, whether you are in your own country or in the country of others, whether you are living in a village or a country or in an isolated place, whether you are associating with friends, human beings or non-human beings. In all these situations, you should be ready to face all sufferings, major, minor and middle, and imagine and understand that there are so many others who are experiencing such sufferings, and therefore pray that all these sufferings come to an end through your personal suffering, and through your personal suffering may their sufferings come to an end, and it is in this way receive the sufferings of others and meditate on compassion. And therefore, whether you are suffering or whether you are happy, you should be able to tolerate it. And unfortunately, in our case, when everything is fine and okay, we really look as a very nice person or great religious practitioner. And when we encounter some misfortune, difficulty, we reveal our true nature. As one great master has said, that when your stomach is full and when you are basking in the warmth of the sun, then you appear like a good religious practitioner. And when you encounter misfortune, you reveal your true nature. So I leave the morning session here because there are some people who are coming to see me. And then in the afternoon session, so I will today during the evening session I will confer the aspirational bodhicitta. And normally when you confer the aspirational bodhicitta, you make some offerings and decorate the place. So I would say the best offering is to put on the yellow religious robes of the bhikshus. And for the bhikshus, it is also an occasion to be proud and display your costume. And I would say that is the best offering.